Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey there, Gary Parrish. Welcome back to CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with you. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent, especially on a day like today. And don't forget, while you're here, to also subscribe to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Let's get into it. As you know, almost nobody ever wins at Allen Fieldhouse other than Kansas. That place is arguably the greatest home court advantage in college basketball. Evidence being that the Jayhawks have been a little shaky in different parts of the season, but still managed to win every single game that they played at home. They were 14-0 entering last night. Game 15 at home, it got a little trickier because Kevin McCullough was out again, and because BYU, which is ranked in the top 15 at KenPom, was in town. By now, you know what happened. Final score, BYU 76, Kansas 68. Inside Fog Allen. So Bill Self now has 18 losses at home in 21 seasons at Kansas. Deadleg, as you know, this is it's a show for us's, but we're not afraid to tip our hats to the thems when they deserve it. Shouts to the thems. You just snapped the Jayhawks 19-game home winning streak.
Yeah, I know. And we'll give them plenty of love. Trivia time. Who has the longest active home winning streak? I think you know this.
Who has the longest active home winning
streak? Also played on Tuesday night at home.
Oh, yeah, that's Grand Canyon.
No, it is Houston. 21
Oh,
games.
Yeah, it's Houston.
So Kansas is done, but Houston has the longest there. KU had won 19 straight overall at home, and it had won 67 consecutive games against unranked teams at Fog Allen Fieldhouse. I think it was 32-1 in its previous 33 home games against Big 12 competition. So, yeah, for BYU to play at Kansas for the first time in that building in more than 50 years and walk in its first season of Big 12 residency and act like it's no big thing, man, oh, man, how about that? That is that's something, man. I was thinking about the banner that that hangs in there, and I thought there was a motto, but I'm not going to say it on the show because it might be a little – it might be a little bit too inappropriate even for this. I'll text it to you on the side in a second, but pay heed all who went, except for those who, anyway, BYU, good job. 76-68. And no McCullough is a major thing. And we'll get to Kansas in a second. If you're watching live, the poll question today is where will Kansas' season end? Will it end in the Final Four, Elite Eight, Sweet 16, or first weekend? So if you're watching, feel free to vote on the poll, and I'll share the results here in a little bit. The result to me, GP, is more about Kansas than BYU, but I'm going to give some love to the winning team. Dallin Hall hitting some big shots, couple big threes there, and doing so despite even having, you know, some foul trouble amongst its starters there. I was really impressed by Mark Pope's team. This is a BYU crew that has rated well in metrics for the majority of the season, but had kind of, and understandably so, just had drifted back a little bit to like, okay, they're another good Big 12 kind of team. They're now back up to 15th at KenPom because as a result of this, they were still top 20 before this. They haven't fallen out of the top 20 period the entire season, but this is the kind of win, even against a shorthanded Kansas team, that I think lends more credence to the idea that BYU very well may be among your highest variance teams in the NCAA tournament. So if you're watching the show on this Wednesday morning, if you're listening, whenever you're listening, we obviously appreciate you in the car, on the run, however you're getting it done, shopping. But consider this with BYU, folks. They like to take threes at a rate that is among the most frequent in the sport. They're fourth highest in three-point rate. The only teams that shoot more, a higher percentage of their three-pointers in comparison to their entire shot arsenal is North Florida, not going to the tournament. Princeton, we'll see, and then Chattanooga. There's not really a high major team other than Creighton and maybe Villanova that builds so much of their offense around the idea that we're just going to launch and launch and launch. And what's interesting about BYU is that it only makes, I say only because this is okay, this isn't great, it makes 35% of its three-point shots. So Mark Pope is all in. They move the ball extremely well. Fusini Traore had himself a nice game, and he is a key cog in that. I thought that he was important there in addition to Dallin Hall, and I've raved about Ali Khalifa and his passing ability overall. It came up big for them on Tuesday night, because they wound up going 13 of 34 from three-point range in hostile territory. I can't remember, Parrish, if I said it on the show. I know I said it on HQ, but I thought that BYU was capable of getting a win in the building because of the way that it shoots, but I thought that it would need to get a little bit lucky here. I thought actually it was going to have to crack 40% from three. It technically did not. That 13 of 34 is a 38% clip, but it was enough, and Kansas did not shoot well from three whatsoever. 3 of 15, it's kind of resembling Creighton's win at home over UConn. Obviously, Kansas was at a home here. So Kansas, to me, again, is the side that I think this is more relevant to. But let's give some love to them and to the winning side. Good job by BYU. That is a seed line bump.
Yeah, I don't care who is on KU's team. You go into Allen Fieldhouse and win, you've accomplished something. There's no reason to try to discount what happened last night from BYU's perspective, but it is true that Kansas was missing its best player. And as we've talked about all season, they already have no depth. They have five reliable players on their team, period.
Well, five reliable. Pause button real quick. Have you been on my side of this just recently? Cause I was maybe the only person in the preseason who genuinely believed that Kevin McCullough Jr. would be Kansas's best player when everyone was saying Hunter Dickinson should be in the running for National Player of the Year in the preseason. Is this a new development on your end, GP?
Oh, I was not there in the preseason. You got there before I am. But, like, you know, I watch basketball, yeah. and he's been their best player.
Especially because he is just super reliable on defense, and now not having him is a major issue. Yes.
And Hunter's the opposite of that on defense. Yes. I say that respectfully. He's a great college basketball player, but he is problematic on that end of the court. I think Kevin McCullough is Kansas's best player, and I would not have said that before this season started. What I also believe is that they only have five reliable players. Like I said this last night on CBS Sports Network, Inside College Basketball, and it got clipped and got retweeted, and some BYU fans are like, well, you know, I think they recruit more than five players. Like, well, of course they do. I mean, what are you talking about? Like, you know, I said what I said. They have five reliable players on their roster. That's what they have on the roster. However they got to this point is how they got to this point. But they have five reliable players on the roster, and one of them is hurt. All right, and he's the best one. So, listen, Bill is so great, and those other pieces are so good that they're still going to be able to go get a Texas here or an Oklahoma there. You know, it's like they're not going to go from good to, you know, bad, but they're going to go from good to, you know, vulnerable, even inside their home arena. And if you saw Bill's comments last night after the game, he was like, I could see this coming. You know, we had no energy at shoot around. We had, you know, a lack of focus. And you know, yes, we are, Bill didn't say this part, but I'll say it for him. And we're missing our best player. And we only have five reliable players anyway. By the way, Nick Timberlake got the start in place of Kevin McCullough. One of nine from the field. I mean, that's a, yeah. You take a first team All American level guy out of your starting lineup and you throw in somebody who's going to give you 1-9. Well, that's how you lose at home to BYU.
I think his only basket was a dunk too, by the way. So,
I'm shocked that he hasn't been better, because like you look around and all of these mid major guards, or a lot of them, are like they're actually popping at the high major level. You know, it's working, and you know Tristan Newton was a mid-major guard, and Mark Sears was a mid-major guard, and Dalton Knecht was a mid-major wing, and they're popping. And the Timberlake thing just has it. And what's wild is it wasn't even in the preseason like we were going, well, who do you think is going to be better? Or which one do you think can be good? Marco Jackson or Nick Timberlake? It was like, it never occurred to me that neither one of them would be hopeful. I thought one of them would be better than the other, and they'd both be good. And as it turns out, neither one of them are helpful. So, Bill sort of touched on some of this stuff last night, just like, hey, I could see this one coming. I couldn't see it coming because, like I said on CBS Sports Network, you tell me Bill Self's coaching in Allen Fieldhouse, I just assume he wins. Okay, GP, but you got to play point guard. All right, well, we'll still figure this out. We'll figure it out. I think he could win with just about anything in that building. But last night he got caught. It's his 18th loss at home now. Mm-hmm. According to KU, just to update the numbers,
yeah,
Bill entered this season with an official record at Allen Fieldhouse of 299-17. He's 14-1 now this season. So that's officially 313-18, 94.6%. 94.6%. Bill Self is more likely to win a home game against anybody than Steph Curry is to make a free throw. Think about that.
That's one hell of a nugget and cool perspective. It's insane.
And he's doing it in what is typically the best league in the country. And once again, this season, 7 undefeated seasons at home in his previous 20 years at Kansas. But obviously, this is not going to be the 8th. And just I'll wrap with this, and you can do whatever you want to after that. But I also appreciated Mark Pope's comments after the game. Like, I like it when people can appreciate a moment. And he seemed to, like, why, we're in this place. Like, look around. Like, this place is amazing. And, like, look at that coach. He, like, actually said to win in this place against that coach is, like, that's wild stuff. And so he gave proper credit to Allen Fieldhouse, proper credit to the greatness of Bill Self. And this is something we've been saying for a little while now. He's been fabulous at BYU. Like, to re-energize that program and then have it transition into the Big 12 and be good. I moved him up to 19th in the top 25 and won this morning. That's a quality basketball thing.
I would presume that the way the scheduling will go, I don't know if BYU and Kansas will play 2 times next season, but Kansas will have to play at the Marriott Center next season. And so, yeah, BYU will actually, if it can have a solid roster, and Kansas should obviously be Kansas, but it will have the rare chance of really being in an advantageous position potentially to hold a winning streak against KU. But we'll see how that goes. And yeah, for Pope to walk in, I say this, half serious, half joking. Savor this one, because if you told me that BYU lost its next 10 trips to Allen, okay, I would believe you. Like, it's not unreasonable. What? So like, if you're a BYU fan in particular, like, this is not normal. don't get comfortable and cherish this one, because hell, maybe you win the next time out. But if you're going to share a conference with this school for the next 20 years, and who the hell knows if even that's going to happen, you might not never win again.
How about this? I wonder, I'd love to get a math-minded person to tell me how to play this one. If somebody said you could bet $1,000 on Kansas going 10-0 at home in its next 10 games against every Big 12 opponent, how would it work out for you?
Ooh, yeah. Someone do the math.
Like Houston. Houston might cause you problems.
Yeah.
But how many people are going to cause you problems?
Or against your average Big 12 opponent? Kind of. Yeah. Do the equation that way. That would be.
We might need to not do 10 because of Bill's age, but maybe like 5. We could be or 3. I mean, I just think there's a scenario. 3. Let's do one.
One.
How about this? To go in there and win under any circumstances is amazing, because Bill Self's been there for 21 years and almost nobody has ever gone in there and won. It is so infrequent,
yeah,
that it's actually difficult to believe. And BYU did that last night. Seriously, congrats. That's amazing.
We can move on. We'll break. I just do want to say one quick thing here. We've mentioned on the pod before, if you're a fan of Kansas and you're a fan of UConn, you're aware of this, but just like one small thing is that UConn was, I think of an understanding and an expectation that it was probably going to land Nick Timberlake. Nick Timberlake wound up going to Kansas, and because of that, UConn got Cam Spencer. And there are other elements at play, But one team is in the mix for a one seed and the number one overall seed and has a real chance to win a national championship. And to me, Kansas, particularly when Self reiterated last night that he doesn't know if they're getting McCullough back, period. Kansas is not on that tier. It's not in that conversation. Again, there are other factors in play, but it is interesting how a fairly well-tracked recruitment of a transfer player like Timberlake was seen as like a top 20 guy in the portal last season and how it's just kind of gone unexpectedly. Keep that in mind, you know, fans 6 to 8 to 10 weeks from now when there are certain names that pop in the portal that you've got expectations on. That's fine, but just remember, nothing is guaranteed and we have these surprises and expectations and twists of plot every single season. You got anything else you want to move on?
Let's move on.
Let's do it. Okay. You know what? I'll take it. Why not? Hey, listen, Reed Shepherd went God mode on Tuesday night. So we are going to talk about what Kentucky did on the road and everything from that and a little more whip around. But first, Nada, can I get a word from our partners, please?
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, Deadland, we got plenty to get to. Bounces around this nation, but I want you to start with Kentucky-Mississippi State.
We got
to
start with Kentucky-Mississippi State. So it's 91-89. Let's talk about what the win means for Kentucky, and then obviously Shepherd. I will start on Shepherd here. 32 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, 2 steals, 2 blocks, including technically the game-clinching steal because Mississippi State, after Shepherd hit an improvisational one-footed, off-footed floater in the paint to give Kentucky the winning margin, he stepped in like a free safety and intercepted it for good measure and clinched it. It was the best game of his career. In my opinion, Reed Shepherd is an All-American at this point, and he is coming off of the bench, 11 of 14 from the field. If you watch this game from start to finish, he did have one bad turnover in the final minute and a half. He clearly made up for that by just almost single-handedly getting Kentucky this win here. UK was down in this game through much of it, and he had a couple of, like, Cal called him out, you know, playfully near the end of the game or in the post game for having a bad three-point attempt that just wasn't there. But Kentucky flipped this with a 44-23 change in the second half, and I was extremely impressed, GP, because now we have seen Kentucky go down to Auburn, have its best defensive performance of the season, keep that team in that environment under 60. Then you had the LSU game with, you lost it and you blew it. No good. Not even like, hey, freak ending. Yeah, but you know what? You were up like, what, 12, 15 points in the second half and you blew it. So you blew it. But then you set a program record, drop 117 on a ranked team, had never been done before in program history. And now you go on the road against a tournament level team, Mississippi State, GP, obviously, that, you know, highly rated defensively, and you go in and you are able to get 91 points on this team and win the way that you did and come back. Extremely impressive from Kentucky. We are now seeing different varieties and different styles of ways that they are finding wins, and I find that to be encouraging at the very least. What were your thoughts on what went down at the hump?
Well, the turnover late, like, Kyle was about to go crazy. It was like, it looked like almost, you know, the quarterback throwing back across his body across the field. Like, no, the ball's in the air too long. And so that was rough. And how Mississippi State got even back in this thing was wild. But it ends up where scores tied, Kentucky gets it out of the net, and you have that, you know, the classic moment. Do you call a timeout and set something out, or just let you guys play? Cal, I think accurately, intelligently allowed them to just go. Like, hey, even if this does, and I would in that case always let them go. First off, I've got NBA players running up the court with the ball. All right, let's just start there. I got NBA players coming up the court with the ball. So let's just start there. And then, even if we're tied, worst case scenario, not worst case scenario, you could always turn it over. I got you. But like most reasonable, real scenario, the worst case reasonable scenario is we're going to overtime. So let's just play it out and let it go. DJ Wagner is the one who actually has the ball in his hands. And I thought this was great. Like, he gave the ball up to Reed Sheppard. Like, do you realize how many times has DJ Wagner in his life ever given that ball up?
I wouldn't say that it's totally uncommon, but in most situations, yes. In that situation, literally, like, you know, game is on the line in a one possession situation. If he's got the ball in his hands, he's shooting it more times than not. But if you pay attention to that, and what Cal said after, if maybe Cal called for it, because obviously they didn't call a timeout, but it was for DJ to decide how this was going to go. And then Sheppard, he kind of clapped for it a little bit, not nearly the same, but a little bit like the Nova trailing play with Jenkins, in terms of Sheppard was kind of behind waiting for it. Wagner got himself in a tight spot. And then there was like, 2.5 seconds to go. And just so prototypical of Sheppard to get the bucket the way that he did, because he does make the occasional bad decision. But Parrish, for every one bad decision Reed Sheppard makes on the floor, there are 20 good ones and great ones there. And he made up for the end. And he's already building to be quite the legend in that state because of his family history and all that. But this was the kind of game where if Kentucky is, I'm not saying it's if it makes the Final Four, but if Kentucky has a good season and it ends in a Sweet 16 or an Elite Eight, and maybe, you know, they might have an awesome memory in the tournament, this will be one of the high marks because it was the game that Reed Sheppard took over. But I'll also say this, and I'll give it back to you. Josh Hubbard had the game high. He had 34 for Mississippi State. He hit the huge shot before that. They hit this huge three. There was no timeout. He was outstanding. He is one of the 10 best freshmen in America, oh, by the way, as well. You probably just haven't seen a ton of him. So credit to him as well. He had an outstanding game, but his team didn't get the last chance at a bucket. Kentucky did, and Kentucky won.
Reed Sheppard last night becomes the first Kentucky player since Derek Anderson in 1996 to get at least 30 points, at least 5 rebounds, and at least 5 assists in a game. So, like, truly unusual stuff. And he has the viral picture of him blocking a shot. Yeah. Hopefully he's off the court pretty good.
Yeah, like, that's daddy's hops right there for sure.
Yeah, like he swats away some long-standing stereotypes. He's not just a great college basketball player. He's like a great NBA prospect. And I saw some people going back and forth this morning about, you know, what is he going to do? You know, I don't care what he does. That's up to him and his family. I'm trying to figure out what my kids are going to do. But like, if to return to Kentucky, he would be turning down the opportunity to be like a top 5 pick. I don't think it's crazy to think he could get into the conversation for number one in a draft that doesn't have an obvious number one. So, perhaps it'll be a hard choice, but it would not be a hard choice for most people. Most people projected to be picked where he's going to be picked, they leave school. But again, his situation is unique. His father's a Wildcat. He's, you know, an in-state young man. I don't think they need to rush off to the NBA to get paid to pay off a house. Plus, there is real NIL money available at Kentucky. I would assume it's less than what the NBA contract he would be able to get. Oh, and it's, you know, and Sam Vecenie, our buddy, who he'll join us in a second.
We'll see if we got time for him.
We'll see if we got time for him. As he points out, it's not all about like where you're going to be picked this year as much as what age do you want to get to your second contract? What age do you want to get to your third contract? And that would serve as some motivation for to influence Reed Sheppard to maybe go now. But whatever, we'll worry about that later. For now, just focus on he is one of the very best and most talented basketball players in the country. And he's coming off of Kentucky's bench steal. And I guess that's a thing. But if he doesn't care, I don't care. I mean, I'll laugh about it someday, probably. Yeah. but like he came off the bench and played 35 minutes last night. Whatever. As for Kentucky's body of work, it's way better than it once was, but it's still, they're 8-7 in the first two quadrants. They have the quadrant three loss to Wilmington Steel. That's about top. That's about 5 seed good based on the way I'm evaluating teams, they're about in that 5 seed, maybe 4 seed range, but clearly moving in the right direction. Last thing for me, like I said on CBS Sports Network last night, I don't know if I'll pick them to win the national championship or even go to the Final Four, but I will never, ever, ever hear on TV, anywhere else, say that they can't do it or be definitive that they won't, because you can see it. It's not there consistently, but when it is there, it's so obvious to see. They're good enough to do it when they are good enough, to not get caught in the ways they've gotten caught so many times this season.
To that point, Antoni Reeves is just ho-hum, another 21. I mean, just very reliable, and his reliability is so key with this team. Between Reeves and Shepherd, if we did All-American teams today, I would have both of them as All-American, second, third team. I don't know what order, but I would actually have both of them there because I think both of them have earned it at this point. And even the Croatian sensation found himself playing a decent amount last night. Contribution-wise, it wasn't major, but I couldn't help but notice that he was on the floor plenty. If you're a Kentucky fan, you're aware of this, but I wasn't until last night, courtesy of our CBS Sports Research folks. Kentucky is 19-1. Against Mississippi State under John Calipari. And so that is the expectation that you beat the Bulldogs, and they were able to come back and get that done there. Kentucky's also won 4 of its past 5 road games. So there's a lot of good stuff that is trending in the right direction overall. So that is encouraging. By the way, I neglected to mention the poll results earlier. I said I would. So coming back around on that, Kansas ending its season in the Sweet 16 is the most popular choice among our live viewers, 44%. And then it's the first two rounds, 29%. Elite Eight, 20%, and then Final Four, just 6%. Obviously, McCullough's availability is significant to that. Let's move on with the whip around. You know what? No setup at all. There was if you went to bed early on Tuesday night, you missed something epic. Nada. Let's roll it. Let's go.
Let's go. McIntosh. No timeouts for the Rams. Lucas fires for the win.
That was history. Do you know the history?
I don't know why it was history. I know I was losing my mind because we have a lot to cover at the end of that game, but inform the audience why that was history.
Jared Lucas last night became the first Division I men's basketball player in history to hit a half-court game winner after earlier in the season fighting bats in an arena.
Oh, there we go. He was the guy, huh?
I don't know. I just wanted to say
okay.
that.
Well, I thought maybe he was the guy. Okay, this game was insane. Parrish was in studio. This was at credit to Fox Sports 1 on the clip there. But GP was obviously up late in studio, so I know you talked about this on Inside College Basketball. The ending of this game was outrageous. Colorado State, it started the game up 3-0, and then Nevada took the lead. And it had the lead until the final 60 seconds of the game. And Isaiah Stevens, who is a freaking ball player, dude. I mean, the passes this guy was delivering to set his team up. Nick Clifford hit a key three from the corner. Joel Scott, Patrick Cartier got some good opportunities there. And then Stevens hits the bucket that ties the game. And this is after Jared Lucas, who's one of the best foul shooters in the Mountain West, missed 2 foul shots. Mm-hmm. So the guy misses the foul shots. He entered the game 91% from the line. Okay. He misses those, but then he hits a buzzer beater from beyond half court that banks in on the road to win it. We love to ask these questions that are borderline unanswerable on this podcast. And this is unanswerable, but I think it may have never happened before. Has there ever been a case where a 90% plus foul shooter missed 2 foul shots back to back in the final 10 seconds, 15 seconds of a game, and then went on to hit the winning shot from beyond half court? That is an incredible, incredible turn of events. 77-74 for Nevada over Colorado State. The Wolfpack at 23-6 has won 4 of its past 7. And at the start of February, you could argue it was not in the field, barely, but not in the field. And now it is comfortably in. Meantime, Colorado State, a team that, you know, GP 6 weeks ago was rating as the best team in the conference. It has now dropped 4 of 5. The only one in there is thankfully a comfortable blowout win over Utah State, but it has lost at San Diego State, at New Mexico, at UNLV, and then it drops at home to Nevada. You would think that CSU will get back on the right track. It's still in the field with some room to spare, but it's got home Wyoming, at Air Force. This was one of the, this might have been the best finish. I don't want to say for sure, but definitely top three finish of the season, Parrish. And it went down at like 12:45 in the morning. But thank goodness I stayed up to watch, because that was so worth it.
We were doing Inside College Basketball, and this was my highlight. You know how it works. They'll hand you a shot sheet, and like it's late at night, and everybody's tired, right? I mean, it's late. And I don't know exactly how it happened, but it was something like, hey, GP, do you want to see this? Now, keep in mind, we had been talking on TV. I did not see this live. All right. I didn't understand what it had. I knew that Nevada had won. That's all I knew. And so they were like, do you want to see? In other words, do you want to see it before we do it? Because sometimes we don't. Sometimes we're just doing highlights and we don't actually know what's coming. We're just looking at a shot sheet and doing the best we can. But I said, if we got time, I'd like to see it. And so then they run it, you know, play one, play two. And then it's like the shot. And I'm like, whoa, thank God I looked at this, because I would have had no idea this was about to happen. It's an amazing moment for a team that plays home games in an arena filled with bats. And the Mountain West is just, we're going to end up in a situation where they're going to get all these teams in. And oh, by the way, UNLV won again last night. They've won like 8 of their past 9, something like
look
that.
Out, yeah. Yeah, look out,
and,
baby.
Yes, and we joked on Sunday's podcast, like everybody always says, and keep an eye on UNLV. You know why? Mountain West, Thomas and Mack. But like, they have 4 wins over NCAA tournament teams this season. Mm-hmm. You know, they beat Creighton. They are playing well right now. So this is like maybe the one year it's actually reasonable to say, keep an eye on UNLV. The issue for the Mountain West is going to be they're going to get all these teams in, and they're all going to be 6 seeds, every one of them.
No, well, I think there's actually, I'll say they got 2 in the 8-9 game. I think they could play themselves into that situation too. So
it's going to be like, and this is going to be bad for them. They're going to be in all these situations where they're not actually expected to advance. So they're not going to. And then everybody's going to say, see, they should have never been in. And it won't make it true.
Yeah, it won't make it true.
But it will make it viral. It'll make it all over the internet.
Yeah, it could become a very popular thing, especially if there's like 6 Mountain West teams in the tournament, none break to the Sweet 16, and then the ACC has like, you know, we look up and Duke and Carolina. And
oh, God, let that happen.
Just forget, just cancel the podcast if that happens. We have nothing against the ACC in general, but that is, trust me.
I do. I actually have a few bones to pick with the ACC. I have some bones to pick with the ACC.
Yeah, I'm very aware that that is possibly in the future, but what a game, man. Again, the Mountain West is the best watch this season of any conference. It just is, man. Every week, every damn week, it is as reliable as it gets. And that was an awesome one. We can keep moving on, because as always on Wednesday, we're up against it with GP's Memphis show. Texas won at Texas Tech, and I did not see this coming, especially not to this level. It was 81-69. The game wasn't that close. Texas was out in front for a long time. So 2 things here on this. 1, Texas, I think you've now figured out the math on this to get them to 9-9. You were having a little issues on Sunday's show, but it's been a couple of days.
I figured it out since I went through. I put pen to paper. I got this thing figured out.
I realized I need to go 3-1 to get to 500. This was a mandatory win situation in order to get there. I thought it was important. Texas's, you know, tournament resume is a little bit more comfortable this morning, obviously, than it was 24 hours ago. But I don't know if people quite realize just how much nothing had been accomplished in the non-con there. And Texas was trying to eat off the Big 12, and that was a big road win. And then the other thing, of course, is that Brock Cunningham made a football move, got ejected for a flagrant 2, as he should have. And then that prompted the throwing of trash and water bottles and stuff on the floor. And then Grant McCaslin had to get on the mic. Ugly scene there. Fans are obviously frustrated with the loss in general. And now Texas Tech has really been stumbling as of late. So any quick thoughts on what went down at United Supermarkets Arena?
Them Texas Tech fans listen to Grant McCaslin about as well as my kids listen to me. He said, don't throw nothing else. And they were like, he's like, don't do it anymore. Not one more time. And they were like, here's another one. They were wild. They get wild down there in Lubbock, don't they?
I wanted the Billy Tubbs, but that's not Grant's mindset. Billy Tubbs famously in like 89 or 90 said, I don't care how bad the officials are being. You can't throw stuff on the floor. Just one of the all-time amazing.
So good. And then is it Steve Weiss has the famous one?
Yeah, you don't live in Cleveland. You live in Cincinnati. Yeah. right. An amazing line. Yeah.
What if Grant McCaslin would have said, you don't live in Austin. You live in Lubbock.
Yes. Come on, Grant. Can we get one of those? But
has anybody ever said, you don't live in Austin, you live in Lubbock?
I don't know if anyone's ever said that.
I don't think anybody's ever tried to criticize somebody by saying that.
Yeah. Oh, man. But anyway, good win for Texas. Nicely done on the road. A team that didn't get it done on the road is Wake Forest. And yes, Norlander jinx remains in full effect. They led the court report on Tuesday, as promised on our Sunday show. And two things for me here. One, that is damaging to the Wake resume. You can make the case now that, yes, after the Duke win, the loss on the road to Notre Dame. Although, Paris, did you look at this morning? I can bring this up. Is that now a quad two? It was a quad three as of last night. Let me see where Notre Dame is this morning. So Notre Dame bumped up from one. It was 140 yesterday, and now it is this morning. Notre Dame is 132 in the net, so that is a 8-point bump and a road game. A road game for quad three is 136 to 240. That is now a quad two loss.
Congratulations to Wake Forest.
Wake Forest does not have, again, arbitrary cutoffs. It does not have a quad three loss on the resume. However, you can still make the case that it is outside the tournament picture. But how about that? And you get this every so often. There's really heightened attention on it when these games are happening, you know, 2 weeks out from Selection Sunday. But yes, that is the change there. And then, you know, when I didn't know this when we talked on the show Sunday, but then I went and talked to Forbes and I talked to him a lot about Hunter Salas. And frankly, if Wake gets in, like, I will write about that. But there was just so much there that it was a court report. It can't be a 2000 word column to start off this thing. So there's a lot with Hunter. No, the rest of it can, but this can't. But what I didn't realize was that, you know, Wake Forest has like 17 storylines right now. It's unreal. There's obviously his wife is recovering from a stroke, but then like Forbes was even willing to go a little more in detail with me and basically say like, this has not been easy. And there have been days where it has been extremely hard. And he has been away from the thing that's crazy about Wake Forest is that Forbes, if you go back to the summer and then throughout the season, like he's been away from his team, like 50 plus days, and they're still in a position to maybe make the tournament. Like that's crazy to me. And then, you know, they lost at Virginia GP like a week and a half ago. He gets on the team bus and his brother's watching the Virginia game. And he knows like about the time when his brother's going to get on the bus, 'cause he knows how this goes. He calls him. He's like, hey, mom's in the hospital. His mom lives in Iowa, man. She's been widowed for 5 years. She's just in bad health. And she was there for, I think she might be out as of today. I don't know that for sure, but she's been in there for a week and a half. And so, you know, he's got to help his wife every day. He's her caregiver. And you know, his mom is in her 70s and doesn't have her husband, doesn't have his dad anymore. So he's been going through a ton. And Forbes, as you well know, is as self-deprecating and really, really willing to dish it as much as he'll take it. Like really a great guy to talk to. Like he's been going through a ton. So a lot of the court report stuff was just on everything that program's been going through. And it is, despite all this, you know, they might make this their second tournament in a decade and a half. So there's a ton with Wake. And yeah, no doubt about it. He's pissed as hell that they lost on that game on the road, because now I think they're narrowly on the outside looking in.
Yeah, that was tough. And I don't want to say I predicted it because I didn't, but it was like, man, that's a tricky spot. Just like Washington State last week, you know, you get so up for this moment and then you actually do what it is you were hoping to do, and to then have to just turn around and be like, all right, let's go, you know. Let's go to a place where we're not going to have the same type of energy and it's just human nature. It's hard to get back to that same place again so quickly, against an unranked team and a game that is off of most people's radar. So it's understandable why it happened, because it happens to college basketball teams all the time, but it's still disappointing if you're a Wake fan, because, you know, I don't want to say you undid all the good you did over the weekend, but you certainly undid some of it.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Palm has Wake out as of this morning. And now they got to play Virginia Tech on the road. Like you got to win that. And then they have a return. I think Georgia Tech and Clemson to close out the season. The bottom line is this: Wake, you got to go 2-1 in the regular season, and you're probably going to be in then. And then we'll assess when you look in the ACC tournament. But that was obviously that was a tough one on the road. What else do we have here? Arkansas lost at home to Vanderbilt. It's just bad. Vanderbilt's not good, and Arkansas loses. That's about it from Tuesday night. I do want to talk on what RJ Davis did on Monday. He reasserted his claim to be number two in the National Player of the Year race, going for 42 points, a career-high 7 three-pointers. He's only one of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. It's only been 10 Tar Heels to ever score 40 or more in a game. I had this note courtesy of a Steve Kirshner, who is a tremendous SID, longtime SID with North Carolina. And when Jordan is invoked in one of your stats, you know you've done well. RJ Davis and what he did on Monday night in UNC's win, closer than it needed to be win, by the way, against Miami. He became, let me bring this up the exact wording here. Okay, so per Kirshner, this is outrageous. So he scored 42 of Carolina's 75 points. It's the first time a Tar Heel has outscored the rest of the team since Jordan in 83, when he scored 39 of Carolina's 72 in a similarly close win over Georgia Tech. It was an outrageously good performance by RJ Davis. Reed Shepard, RJ Davis, studs of the week so far. We'll see if those performances, Jared Lucas will give you your shine too for what you were able to do there in Colorado State on Tuesday night. But just incredible stuff, man. And set a Smith Center record. There had never been a person, period, in any kind of game. This is according to UNC Athletics, that had scored 42 points in that building. And whether it's in a Carolina uniform, an opponent's uniform, they've played NCAA tournament games. No one had ever scored 42 or more in that building. RJ Davis has done it. Congrats to him. Congrats to UNC. That's your fourth one seed right now.
Yeah, I just went and grabbed. I'm not sure it's your fourth one seed right now, but we don't have to debate that today. I just went through and tried to find like other greats who have played inside that building, in addition to all the North Carolina players. Tim Duncan, Grant Hill, Lynn Bias, Christian Laettner, Chris Paul, Stephon Marbury.
Michael Jordan.
I said in addition to all the North Carolina guys. Gotcha.
Yeah. I didn't know if you were getting there. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. No. Like Jason Tatum, Zion Williamson.
Leaky Black?
Leaky Black has played there. Thank you. Yeah. And Cormac Ryan's played there, and nobody's ever done what that young man did the other night. I'm glad you, because sometimes by Wednesday morning, stuff that happened on Monday night just feels so, a long time ago, but that deserves a mention. He's been tremendous all season and better every season than the previous one. Exactly. Maybe not exactly the way you want a college career to go. Maybe you want your college career to go exactly like Carmelo Anthony's, right? Get in there, be awesome, win a title, get out. But what an amazing, he's an all-time North Carolina great. That's not an easy thing to ever be. I don't care how good you are, because there's a lot of them. But he's an all-time North Carolina great.
He absolutely is. And Palm is Carolina on the one line right now. Who is your fourth team right now, GP, on your top 25-1?
I don't want to misquote myself. Tennessee. Yeah. I've got Tennessee.
Okay, so you got Tennessee 1. If it is maybe Arizona's in the battle there, I wonder, mark it down here February 28th. Will we see a situation, and it would take a lot to get there? UNC's the one, or UNC's the two, but I think UNC's got to be the one in the West, and Arizona's the two in the West. Carolina up top, Caleb Love on the bottom. Elite Eight matchup.
Terrific.
It would be terrific. We've got a long way to go to get there, but that is a conceivable Dr. Strange level kind of outcome. I have one quick headline note here before we take our second break and wrap up the show. It was determined and voted on Monday that the MAC is going to add UMass in all sports starting in 25-26. So that means UMass will be leaving the Atlantic 10, which will go from 15 to 14 schools if it doesn't choose to add another school. And this is obviously being done for football. Certainly worth just bringing up because it's a story that impacts basketball as well. UMass has not been as good as it should be, frankly, as a program for way too long. Right. So I understand that. And from what I understand, UMass fans are kind of split on this as well. There are some that are like, hey, listen, we're not getting it done in the A-10, period. And we want our football team, which might have some viability, to go back and play in the MAC. I get all that. But I'm allowed to just be a little bit bummed, particularly as someone who, lives in the Northeast, right? Once debated going to college at UMass and applied at UMass. It just, the A-10 is all about hoops and UMass to me, kind of like, it was like UMass and Temple defined a lot, and Temple's not in the league anymore. And it's another example of just, you're just stripping away a little bit of basketball's importance. And I get all that. Maybe UMass will be better off for this. Maybe it will. I don't know. It is going to be weird. I have not talked to Frank Martin about this, but the idea that is he going to be psyched to be playing games at Central Michigan and Northern Illinois? I have no idea. But if you're a hoops lover, I think this lands is like a real bummer here. I understand why they're doing it, but it's just another example. And now this is what happens. It filters down. It's just not your power conference stuff. It filters down to these levels. And so your basketball first leagues get stripped away even more when these decisions get made for football.
Yeah, we talked about it on Inside College Basketball on Tuesday night. I'm like you, a little bummed by it. I understand it, but I'm a basketball fan. I don't care about UMass football, but I do like the idea of UMass basketball. Like when Marcus Camby and John Calipari were at the tip top of the sport, like that's my end of my high school, start of my college. You know, I'm a big college basketball fan. UMass mattered. And I know it hasn't been what it was and should be anytime lately, but that's still a basketball brand. Like UMass still sounds like something that matters in basketball. Yeah. And to watch them willingly downgrade basketball conferences, I don't like that. Yeah. Just to put some numbers on it, the Atlantic 10, perhaps not as strong as it once was, but it's still the eighth best league in the country according to the net. The MAC this season is the 24th best league
it's
in the country.
24th?
That's what I saw as of last night.
That's actually okay. The MAC is not as good as the A10, but that's even lower than I thought. Damn.
Do you want to double check me?
No. I mean, I'm sure you're right. I know the MAC is down, but 24 is
what I'm looking at right now is they're listed. It's at bracketologist.com.
Yeah.
And they're listed by average net ranking of your league members. So Big 12 is one, Big 10 is two, SEC is three, so on and so forth. According to this ranking, Atlantic 10 is eight. And the MAC is 24th.
How about that real quick for me on that end? Because I just brought up the KenPom history page. So it's 24 at KenPom right now as well. It was 19 last year, 20 the year before. Historically, the MAC ranks around 12, 13. And that's what it was in that neighborhood for a good decade before that. But for whatever reason, the league has taken a major step back here in the past three seasons.
So I don't like it from that perspective. Like UMass, this program that was ranked number one in the country and in the Final Four in my adult life, has just willingly decided we are going to go from the eighth best basketball league to the 24th best basketball league. I don't like that. When I say I don't like it, that's what I mean. I do understand it. Every decision, like I said last night on television, these days is motivated by money and or football. And here we are. Based on nothing more than Twitter replies, I gather UMass fans are, it looks to me like maybe split, sure, but certainly the replies I'm getting are more in favor of than not. It's like our football program could become something, but we've got to get it in a league where it could become something. And it just based on what some UMass fans were tweeting me, the long-term hope is we get our football program in a real league. We start winning that league. Then maybe it opens doors to another league. This could be a stepping stone type of situation. I don't know. Either way, I understand the motivation. I get it. Don't tweet me and be like, well, what you don't understand, I do understand. I just strictly from a basketball perspective, in that vacuum, master of ceremonies, A10 media lunch and pre-pandemic. Yeah. I don't like this.
Yeah, that's fair. You know what? I'm going to keep us moving here. I don't mean to be taking your thing, but let's just move on. Not a partners. We got to preview some games and other housekeeping stuff, partners.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, looking ahead to the next two nights. On Wednesday night, tonight, we got a doubleheader on CBS Sports Network. Inside College Basketball, 6 o'clock Eastern, 6:30, Rhode Island at VCU, 8:30. This is a good one. St. John's at Butler.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's a good one. Then we'll wrap the night with another episode of Inside College Basketball. Elsewhere tonight, number 11, Auburn at Tennessee, BP back in Knoxville, Providence at number 5, Marquette, Louisville at Duke. This is Kyle Filipowski's first game since the court storm. See how he looks. Oklahoma at number 8, Iowa State, Seton Hall at number 12, Creighton. Big opportunity for the Pirates there. Number 14, Alabama, down in Oxford at Ole Miss. Number 6, Arizona at Arizona State. What do you like there?
It's good nights. It's even more packed than Tuesday was. Auburn, Tennessee is the game of the night. No doubt about that. Two top 6 KenPom teams. And we'll see if the Tigers, who Ross team reported Jalen Williams is going to travel with the team. I don't think he's going to play, but maybe he'll play. I don't know. I tell you what, if he played and he was effective, that might change the dynamic and chances for Auburn to win significantly there. But that's just a good game and a good watch there. In Tennessee, the game means something because now we are into that window clearly where Tennessee's fighting to be a one seed and got to win the game at home if you want to be able to do that. So obviously watchable there. St. John's on the road at Butler, double bubble game. St. John's needs a win to keep its case alive for being in the tournament. It's not in the tournament. Even winning this game, I don't think would put St. John's in the tournament. But I do think Butler lost here. If St. John's were to win, I think both teams would be on the outside looking in. I don't think that you can justifiably have Butler in the field if it loses this game as well. We are looking at 5 losses in a row. If that happens, what's 5 losses in a row, GP? Trivia time.
That's the epitome of brutality.
No. Ion College Basketball. Trivia time for the chat. What is 5 losses in a row? Let's see if someone gets it.
That's a 5-game disaster.
No. Gosh, you can't even keep up with it. All right.
I know it was a 2-game skid.
Yes, 3
and
games, 3-game
streak, and then I don't like Swoon at all. Well, I'm still anti-Swoon.
It's Swoon, and you got to live with it. 5 games is a slump.
Of course it is. Yeah, they're in a bad slump.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, so So keep an eye for Butler. That's in a tight spot there. That's definitely a highly watchable game. But yeah, that's a nice little Wednesday for you. I'll be dialed into any and all of it. What else we got for Thursday?
Thursday, USC at number 19, Washington State. See if our Cougars can bounce back.
That's
number 7,
the DJ Rodman homecoming game. By the way, used to play for Wazzer.
It's a DJ Rodman homecoming game. Number 17, St. Mary's is at Pepperdine. And number 23, Gonzaga at San Francisco. Quad one opportunity for the Zags.
ESPN 2 tip at 11 Eastern. That's a late night situation. Gonzaga needs to win that game in order to keep its at-large case alive. In my opinion, it will not be in the projected field if it cannot win. This is at Golden Gate Mike Arena, by the way. It is not on San Francisco's campus. I don't know why they are playing this at Golden Gate Mike Arena. Hell, for all I know... Mike Anderson's going to be on hand at the game and they're honoring him at halftime. I don't know why they're playing this thing where the Warriors normally play, but good on you. Gonzaga, San Francisco, 11 Eastern, Golden Gate Mike Arena. Keep an eye, or Golden Gate Mike Center, I guess, technically, in keeping with the theme and the conceit there. Nebraska at Ohio State. Cornhuskers going to try and get a road win. I think that's a pretty big one. 6:30 Eastern, FS1. And yeah, there's not a ton here. Like Memphis on the road, East Carolina, you can't afford to take a stumble. So keep an eye on that. And then, yeah, LeBron James had a deleted tweet about, you know, how Bronny James isn't in the projected 2024 mocks anymore, and now 2025. And then he's like, hey, just let the kid live his life and stop putting pressure on him. Dude,
you're the one who put the pressure on him.
I know.
We were all letting Bronny live his life up until you tried to tell us over and over again he's a one-and-done player and better than current NBA player. This is wild to me that he's so offended. The only reason Jonathan Givony's got to go on TV and say Bronny James is not a one-and-done player is because LeBron James has been telling the world that he is for multiple years.
That is true. And I believe Givony is a longtime dedicated pod listener. Shouts to you, John. I believe John also at one point had Bronny James as a top 15 pick as well. So he might need to be giving some explanation for that as well. He obviously is not. And frankly, and this is a discussion mostly for another time, I think there's a really good opportunity for a really, really good story next season if Bronny James were to come back, USC or elsewhere, but probably USC, and actually develop into like a really, really good player. Maybe it won't happen, but maybe it will. And if it does, hey, wouldn't that be an awesome story? Think about that. A guy who goes into college and things don't work out the way, you know, they're expected to the first year, but he stays, returns a second year, and maybe gets a lot better. Maybe his team gets a lot better. Wild idea, I know. But wouldn't that be a cool story? So maybe just keep an eye on that as a...
An advice for all parents, you and I included. Maybe maybe don't ever be the first person to claim that your son's going to be a one-and-done first-round pick.
I will not be.
Maybe let somebody else do that before you do it,
yes.
Right?
Because yes.
You might not be seeing it so clearly.
That's right. Well, as a father to boys who literally in the past week took their, you know, they just went to their first, future stars basketball thing. And they're in this like 2 month program. Trust me, I'm not declaring that, but they got another one on Saturday and I look forward to seeing them. All right. Two housekeeping items. And we're going to get out of here because GP's got to get ready for a show. One, I'm doing this Friday, whether you want to or not, but I want you involved. Okay. The D3 bracket was released for the men's NCAA tournament. D3. I want to pick this thing. It's the entire bracket. Whoever gets more is worth one final 4-1 thing. Are you willing to do this on Friday's show? Just go through, pick the D3 bracket. The point is we don't know about these teams and just see who does better.
It seems like a colossal waste of time, but I'm not above wasting time. I do it all the time.
I will say this. If we do Friday's show and we're up against it and you don't have time, you can leave the podcast and then I'll just spend 4 minutes at the end of the show picking this damn thing by myself. But I'm doing it.
Hey,
the D3 bracket.
In the spirit of being a good teammate, if it means something to you, I'll play along.
Okay, there we go. And then Friday is March 1st. Longtime listeners of the show realize what that means, but I do want to give you a heads up. I am in the middle of writing like a big feature that I got to get done here. So normally I have the time to dedicate like some super creative and awesome and memorable show open. That is not going to be the case this year. I just do not have the time to do this because I'm working on a feature, which we will talk about very, very soon. And you might even be seeing more of what this feature is about. So March is coming. You will have the music, but it might be extremely basic when it gets there. And heck, maybe some people are like, just get me the music anyway. That is your heads up. There will be no super detailed, creative thing I've slaved over like... like some record producer for months and months and months. That's what I got for you. But Friday is March. Friday is March.
Friday is March. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M.F. and Teagle. Legend. Shouts to Huck and Larnell. Thank you guys once again for watching and listening to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them. There still is. I mean, but it's still true. I know what happened.
They heed all who enter, except those who, and then you fill in the blank.
There's more of us than there are of them. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it. Every once in a while we have a night where it doesn't feel like it, but it's still true. It needs to be reflected in the comments. So do that. We'll talk to you again on Friday. Till then, take care.
What's up, y'all? This is four-time NBA champ Andre Iguodala.
Yo, and this is his best friend, the Ohio State legend, Evan Marcel Turner I.
Every Wednesday, we drop a new episode on our show, Point Four.
We're talking basketball, business, and all the culture in between.
From locker room stories to some basketball analysis from those who've been in the game.
Now, it is a dude averaging 29 and 11. God, what did it take to be an all-star?
A win. Subscribe to Point Forward the podcast so you don't miss a thing.